103.2 Dublin City FM for the best in all sports coverage, analysis, interviews and reports.
GAA Sports Desk on Dublin City FM.
With Mick Hanley, Suzanne Parker and Peter Brennigan.
In association with Tipperary Natural Mineral Water. And our thanks to John and the Live Drive team for getting you home safely this evening. And Live Drive returns tomorrow morning at 7 a.m. Now, coming up on GAA Sports Desk this evening, we're going to be speaking to Herald journalist Conor McKeown about the Dublin Bus Herald Dubstar football team, which is named during the week. And Conor is also going to be looking at the recent talk of a new stadium in the north of Leinster that is going to serve as a potential second base for Dublin, and also is going to serve as an outside of Croke Park venue for teams to take on Dublin in. We're all going to be speaking to Brendan Cooper for all the latest Camogie action. We're going to be hearing an interview that we conducted recently with Anthony Daly about his new autobiography, and we're going to be speaking to the new Dublin Camogie manager, Shane O'Brien. Remember, if you want to contact us in studio, you can. The text line here is 087-977-1032. You can email us, gaasportsdesk@dublincityfm.ie, or you can go onto our Facebook page, which is GAA Sports Desk on Dublin City FM. But it is with Ronan McLaughlin that I begin. Ronan looked back on Ballyboden and Lucan getting to the under-21 final in Dublin and to Crokes against Nafina, but it's with the hurling that he started. Well, Ronan, Ballyboden St. Enda's defeated St. Vincent's in the Dublin under-21 hurling semi-final over the weekend, and an emphatic victory for Ballyboden.
It was, yeah. I think, I'm not sure the margin of victory was perhaps fair on Vincent's on given the amount of possession that they had, but certainly, Ballyboden were deserving winners. It's just Vincent's, I suppose, I said in my report that they needed to take all the chances that came their way, and they were very profligate in the first half. They hit an awful lot of wides, and they dropped about five or six into the keeper's hands. You know, just wasted possession, and I think they needed a good start to build up their confidence and keep themselves going, because I think on paper, certainly Ballyboden looked stronger, and it was a case of maybe Vincent's relying on two or three players, whereas, you know, the threat from Ballyboden seemed to come from all over the field. So I thought Vincent's played well. To be brutally fair, I think given the circumstances, you know, the final score mightn't suggest that, but I thought they battled gamely all the way through the match. It's just they come up against a better team, and if you don't take your chances in the first half and give yourself a chance to be competitive, well, it was always inevitable that it would sort of slip away from them after the break, and that's what actually happened.
Yeah, indeed, and as you mentioned in your report here, they were 14-3 ahead at half time. So I suppose Vincent's needed to really come out and burst out of the blocks in the second half, but it was Bowden who started the second half better.
They did, and it was, you know, Vincent's decided at that stage that goals was about the only way that would get them back in to the game, and it meant that you know, they had a few point chances which they just didn't go for, and they went for goals, and there was half blocks, and so it was a bit of luck. The rub of the green didn't really go their way on the day, but I think in the first half they'll know that in the first half, I think it was 11 wides they had in the first half, and that's just too many. It was a perfect day for hurling, given the conditions we've had recently. It's a decent all-weather pitch there in Santa Maria, and it was a very, very still day. There wasn't much of a breeze, so there couldn't be any excuse. It's just some poor shooting on the day, and they just left themselves with too much to do in the second half, and Bowden are too good a team to be caught on the hop.
Yeah, indeed. And who were the players that impressed you for Bowden in this victory?
I think Conor Robinson was my nomination for man of the match, and I think he was excellent. Everything he does is done with a very, very calm assurance. Mightn't be the flashiest of players, but as we saw in last year's county final, he was man of the match as a 19-year-old from wing back in the senior county final. He's progressed very, very steadily. He's a very crisp striker of the ball. He reads the game very, very well, and he very rarely gives it away. And I suppose no frills about him, but certainly does a very, very effective job, and is a stylish enough hurler to boot. In attack, Paul Doherty looked very, very strong and sharp. Got two lovely scores at the start, and looked accurate enough. Colly O'Neill's pace caused Vincent a lot of trouble. He's a low centre of gravity, and on an all-weather pitch like that, we're not going through, tracing through the muck and the heavy pitches. It seems to me that the all-weather pitches are duly suited to him, given that he can turn very, very sharply and get away from his men, and he's great pace. He's not going to get caught, and he's accurate as well. So Colly was very, very good, and I suppose defensively, Jamie Desmond was very solid at centre-back for Ballyboden. But I suppose if you're looking at Vincent's, one player who I've an awful lot of time for, we've seen a lot of him this year with the Dublin Myers, is Ray McBride. And once again, he was excellent for Vincent's. I mean, he was, not that he was fighting a solitary battle, but certainly in the first half, he got two exceptional scores from play and looked the class act that he undoubtedly is.
And Ballyboden now are set to take on Lucan in the final, and they had a not quite as big, but still a big victory in their game. So, how did you view that particular match?
Well, I just well from a distance because I was in Sancta Maria, but sorry without being facetious. I've seen them a couple of times this year, and I think they're a very very solid unit. I think there was a very good balance to them. I think there seems to be a perception that Bowden might win that 21 final handily enough. I certainly wouldn't subscribe to that. I think the senior players on that Lucan team are exceptional players. You're talking Matt McCaffrey at centre-back is a huge player for them. Chris Cummie, centre-forward. Chris had to go off with a broken nose there the last day against Bridges. But Bridges had the depth to come through that. You've Emmett O'Connella and Owen O'Connella in the full forward line who are very, very strong. It's great to see Emmett back with the hurl in his hand and playing competitive hurling again, given that he's been focusing on getting into that Dublin senior panel and getting a few games under Jim Gavin. And then I suppose the biggest boost, I think, for Dublin hurling seems to be the return to form of Sean McClelland. He's been moved around a bit in the Lucan senior team, and I've seen him line out at corner forward and in positions that you wouldn't naturally associate with him, but he's back playing wing back now, which is where he excelled for Dublin minor teams, and either at corner back or wing back, and he looks to have rediscovered his form. Certainly I was talking to Timmy Owen Batney from Bridget's after the game, and he was full of praise for how McClelland played. He said he was the best player on the pitch by a large distance, and looks to have got back to that level that made him such a prospect a couple of years back. So that's hugely encouraging from a Lucan perspective and from a Dublin perspective. But if you're asking about the final, I think it'll be very, very close. It's going to be on in O'Toole Park. I don't know if it's a huge issue, but I certainly feel that Ballyboden haven't played their two games on an all-weather pitch. It's a different type of game. You could have a dirty old day in O'Toole Park and a heavy enough pitch as well. And Bowden haven't had experience at this year in the Championship, whereas certainly Lucan played out in Marley Park there at the start of their campaign and looked very, very good that day. So that might be something that might be in Lucan's favour. I think they're a very solid team. They don't concede an awful lot of scores, whereas Bowden seem to look to outscore teams. I know they beat Crokes 123-117 earlier on in the year, I think 3 weeks ago, fortnight ago, and I think they'll be doing very, very well to rack up that type of score now in O'Toole Park. I could believe it's Sunday week.
Yeah, it's indeed a final to look forward to. But staying with underage GAA, but moving to football, and Nafina are taking on Crokes in the Dublin Minor Football Final. So that pairing was confirmed at the weekend. Nafina beating Thomas Davis and Kilmacore Crokes beating Ballyboden.
Absolutely. Certainly a huge respect goes out to Kilmacud, given that they lost their first two matches in the group stages. They lost to St. Maur's and they lost to Nafina earlier on in the year in the group, and it didn't look good for them, but they've knew that pretty much it was knockout from that point on, that every game had to be won, and they've managed to do that. I wasn't at the game against Ballyboden on Sunday morning, but I believe Bowden just didn't turn up on the day, which is unfortunate. I expected it to be far tighter than it was. I think Ballyboden have some very decent footballers there, lads like Colly Pasquale and Warren Egan and Barry McGarry and lads like that, and Shane Clayton, lads heavily involved with the Dublin minor team this year. But apart from the first 10 minutes, I believe Crokes dominated from start to finish, and their tackling and intensity was just of a higher level to what Ballyboden were able to produce on the day. And they'll certainly need to replicate that against Nafina, because that Nafina team look like they're hitting their strides. I spoke to the manager, John Caffrey, a few weeks back, and he was slightly concerned, despite them getting the results, that they hadn't really kicked into gear, and the hurling, given that they've so many dual players, was a bit of a distraction, because it was training 1 week on, 1 week off, and he just didn't have, as he felt, sufficient time to be working with them. But now that that hurling is finished, and obviously Sinn Féin will be looking to go for a double on Sunday, they've managed to improve with every game and with every training session, I'd imagine, and I think they'll be a very hard bet on Sunday.
Yeah, yeah, indeed. And I remember you saying to me about that Sinn Féin team when they beat Crokes in the hurling, that they'd obviously won the Féile 2 years previously and they were hugely impressive. Are they the same kind of standard in football terms? Or?
Oh, they'd be very, very strong at football. I mean, you're looking at, there's some quality all the way through the team. Lads like Aaron Byrne and Don Merchant, Alistair Fitzgerald is a player who I hugely admire, both football and hurling. They're just going to be strong. They're going to be very, very competent. They know each other very, very well at this stage. But, you know, Crokes have Dr. Pat Duggan as their manager, and you'd never rule out any team that he's involved in. They'll be very well prepared. I just would concern myself that they mightn't have the scoring threat that Sinn Féin have all the way through their team, and that might actually prove the difference on Sunday.
And our thanks to Ronan McLaughlin from The Herald.
And Dublin Camogie Seniors have a new manager, and I am delighted to be joined by Shane O'Brien. Shane, thank you very much for joining me on the programme.
No problem at all.
Before we actually look at your plans for the year and everything you're going to be doing with the senior team, can you tell me a little bit about yourself and your background and how you really got involved in the coaching?
Yeah, well, I suppose I've been playing hurling since I was about 4 or 5 years of age. So my father's a Kilkenny man, so he would have, hurling was his first love and still is, obviously. So I would have been playing at a very young age. And I actually took up coaching at a very young age as well. I was coaching in primary school, in my own primary school, when I was in secondary school with kind of kids in primary school. So I would have had, a love for hurling from a very young age, and continues now as I'm coaching, you know.
Yeah.
I'm still playing a bit as well. So.
Yeah. And tell me, you've just taken over the senior team. What are your plans this year for the girls?
I was involved last year there coaching, and my role now this year is obviously quite different as manager.
Yeah.
But we're all very much looking forward to it, and I think I may have said there last week, we have kind of, we're very realistic in what we're aiming for as well. We're not getting too carried away either, you know.
Yeah. And how, looking at the other teams that are involved in the senior competition that you'll be meeting during the year, Cork and Wexford, they're such high calibre, and Dublin did find it difficult against them last year. How do you think you'll be able to bring it to that type of a standard, or is that something long term that you need to focus on?
Absolutely. You know, we're looking at both short term and long term goals, and realistically that is where Dublin should be aiming to be in the coming years. There's no doubt, the pool of players at our disposal, there's huge talent there at the underage structures, and we've had success in recent years. So I think it should be a long-term goal for Dublin Camogie to be not just competing, but to be winning games at that level. But you know, last year it was quite a shock for me getting involved and taking such defeats, and I was only in a short little time, and the hurt and the pain just to see it on the players' faces, and they've been going through that for years. So, you know, we'd be looking certainly to change that, to turn all that around, and just really to be concentrating on getting the players to be the very, very best that they can be, you know.
Yeah.
And I suppose the winning isn't necessarily everything, but the wanting to win is, and we definitely want to instill that in the team, and for them to gain a bit more kind of self-confidence in that by being a bit more competitive, and you know, trying to get that best performance, just getting the very best out of them. And I think at the end of the year, if they are a better team, I'll have achieved something as manager, and I would hope certainly that we'd be raising the bar considerably, you know.
Fantastic. The open trials you held on Monday night, you had 90 people showing up for them. How did they go?
Yeah, it was quite extraordinary. We were blown away by the enthusiasm, to be honest with you. Like, we sent out requests to the clubs to put players forward, and we asked them to be, you know, we worded it in such a way that we wanted to attract who they felt, players who they felt were going to be competitive at senior inter-county level. And I have to say, we were blown away. Myself, Michael and Shane were just blown away by the standard. And we had two games back-to-back. I think we had a few people that were injured in that, but we had 80 players, I think, who we were trying to watch, which was a difficult task. But we're obviously, you know, we're picking a panel now, but we're not just basing it on those two games. We've been looking at the championship during the summer, and obviously their performances for Dublin in recent years as well. But it was fantastic. It was there was actually a great atmosphere there. You know, there seemed to be, as I said, huge enthusiasm for the whole thing. So it was great, and it was very positive to see so many people going forward from the clubs that they had nominated these players. Was superb.
And from the players that came, is there a lot of new faces into looking to get into the intercounty scene?
Yeah, no, there definitely are. Like, again, now, I was only involved last year.
Yeah.
I started off kind of training the team once a week, and I gradually increased that, just like other commitments and that. But there are Jeannie Mack, we were looking at it. We have a panel at this present moment. We've picked 40 players, and we've narrowed that down to 32. But I'd say we have at least well over a dozen new players on the panel this year.
Brilliant.
Some excellent talent now. And a lot of young players coming through as well. And it's great to see we have players from clubs that may not have been involved before, the likes of like in recent years, we have girls from Kilmacud Crokes. We would have had none last year. St. Jude's, and we've a few more from Ballyboden as well, and a huge number from Vincent's, which is great. So,
yeah,
you know, we're getting a good broad range of clubs involved as well, which is good. You know,
and tell me, you have a new background team that are also been mm-hmm. brought in. Michael O'Grady, I think, is the team advisor, and Shane yeah. Dalton is a selector.
Yeah, and John Tracy as well as a selector. Now, John is in South Africa at the moment.
Oh, beautiful.
Yes, exactly. I know he was even ringing there yesterday looking for updates on the trials and that. So that's the team we have. And then we have Danny there as the team advisor as well.
Yeah.
Or as team ambassador, I should say.
Yes.
He'll be advising as well, hopefully.
And how will you be working together? Will you work as a group, or will you end up killing each other?
No. I'd John is managing me. John Tracy is managing me now on a cooler junior team at the moment. So, and I've worked with John before, and I've worked under him. He managed the cooler senior hurling team I would have been playing on for years. So I know John very well, and also know Michael O'Grady as well.
Yeah.
So, and John Tracy would be very friendly with Shane Dalton as well. They would play together in Dublin for years. So to be honest with you, the relationship we have, even at the moment, like, you know, it's they're a fantastic bunch to work with, and everything is going very smoothly anyway at the moment, so
well,
long may it last.
Exactly. Well, yep. Thank you very much for joining me on the programme, Shane, and I wish you the very best of luck for 2015.
Very good. Listen, no problem at all. Thanks, Amin.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
All right.
And our best of luck again to Shane O'Brien and his team, and thank him for joining me on the programme. Now, staying with Camogie, I spoke earlier with Brendan Cooper. And I am delighted to be joined by the Vice Chairman of Dublin Camogie, Brendan Cooper. Brendan, thank you very much for joining me on the programme.
As always, Suzanne, a pleasure.
The last few games of the year still left to be played in the Minor Championship, and I think the final in the Minor A's of Naive Jute and Lucan is on this weekend.
That's right, Suzanne. Well, there's a slight doubt as to where it's on this weekend. I'm actually talking to both clubs at the moment. I'm trying to get a grass pitch for them, which I'm having great difficulty because of the time of year at this stage. So let's just say, the next couple of days, this match will be coming up. I'm talking about Jude's and to Luke and Sarah's, who both actually want to play in grass. So there's almost a little bit of white smoke, Suzanne. So this match is to be confirmed as we speak. But you're right, this will be a great match now. This is two very, very exciting teams. And between them, I'd say they'll probably have, 12 to 15 players on a county minor team. This will be a match well worth seeing, and we can actually tie it down to a specific time and date.
Yeah.
But both teams will have known each other going back over the last couple of years. Jude's have won a sale there recently. Luke have won a sale. So both teams are sprinkled with a huge amount of upcoming stars. Hopefully these will be our players this time next year, Suzanne.
And is there any surprises about the two teams that made it into the final?
No, not the least, Suzanne. I probably would have mentioned some months ago or some weeks ago that if I had to kind of put my neck on the block, I would have said, on all known form, these two teams are going to go through. And so it was. Both of them had reasonably comfortable wins in the group stages.
Yeah.
No surprise there whatsoever. And the fact that both of them are coming up, and I know both clubs are actually looking forward with a huge amount of anticipation. That's why they were keen to play on a grass pitch as opposed to an AstroTurf. And because it'll be such an attractive venue, I'm prepared to talk to the clubs and come up with a mutually agreeable solution to this. So it's a work in progress, Suzanne, but it's upcoming in the next couple of days, but that's no doubt.
And another final that's going to be on over the weekend is Ballinteer St. John and Fianna.
Yeah, again, these two teams will have met at senior three level, and a lot of the players that were playing at senior three will also be playing at minor. Two young teams, and this time it definitely is going ahead next Sunday at 11 a.m. in Parnell GAA Club. Again, the age profile of both these is very similar, and the standard is very similar. I think Ballinteer may have a slight edge, although my own club won't thank me for saying that, mind you. But I'm hoping that Nafina will do the business. But it's going to be a close match either way. I can't see either team winning by 10 points. If that is no doubt, whoever wins this match will have earned the right to a big championship. And it'll probably be by 2 or 3 points at the most, Suzanne.
Yeah.
Very attractive game to watch now.
Yeah. And last night in the Group C game, Castleknock and Lucan. And I think Lucan were the winners there by 1 point.
Yeah, a strange scoreline there, Suzanne. Castleknock 2-2. Lucas Sarsfield's 3 goals, no points. I haven't actually spoken to anyone about this particular match, but as you can imagine, a point victory or a point loss for Castleknock as it is kind of heartbreaking, because the winner of that match went into a semi-final in the SC in the Monty's Championship, and the loser goes into the Shield. So there was a lot of stake for that match last night, and I say, Lucan, obviously, their A's are in the final, their C's are in the final. It just shows how progressive Lucan are. And Castleknock are not far behind them when it comes to determination. As I say, on a different day, it could have been Castleknock, but as it is, Lucan, 1 point victors there, Suzanne. Very close indeed.
And the semi-finals that are going to be on then over the weekend are Coola and Lucan and Raheny and Kilmacud Crokes.
Yeah, again, Coola have a sprinkling of under-16 there. Stars, county stars from last year. Cool that they haven't got an adult team now at this stage. They've been concentrating on juvenile for the last number of years. And obviously, minor, this is the last time that they would be juvenile in the strict sense of the word. So they put a lot of work in out there in Cooler, Suzanne, and they have some nice players. And I think Cooler should, on all known form, beat Lucan. But as I say, Lucan had their victory last night. Who knows? That might extend to Sunday coming, but I think Coola just by a small margin, Suzanne.
Yeah, and the final in this minor C has to be pushed back to Friday the 19th. Or sorry, the 12th.
The 12th,
weekend of myself.
It's a work in progress, Suzanne, with the best will in the world, because they were running slightly behind schedule. I had hoped to run off all the A, B and C plans this weekend. That was that was the master plan, but like every plan, it tends to change depending on circumstances. The weather didn't help our cause, and it was more teams in the C division than there were elsewhere. So as a consequence, we were playing a little bit of catch-up. So we've had to put the semi-finals down to this Sunday, and then the finals themselves the following the 12th of December, because we have minor county trials on the 14th. So even though it's the end of the season, Suzanne, you wouldn't know it by looking at the schedule at this moment in time. It's as busy now as it was during the middle of the season and such, but it's a good complaint, and it's great that we're able to get out there and about, that the weather's been reasonably kind to us, that we can still play, in the middle of December, which can't be a bad the way times are over the years, that, come November, our matches would stop, but pitches have got better, more all-weather facilities. It's great that we're able to play this time of year, Suzanne.
Yeah, and Brendan, before I let you go, the Dub Stars announcement has been made.
That's right, yes. We're delighted again. The ladies football are coming back on board this year after a few years' absence. They went on board last year, the year before, from memory. We actually have a meeting with them. Myself and Pat Martin have a meeting there tomorrow night to discuss the nitty-gritty as to what format it's going to take, etc. But it promises to be, on Sunday the 28th in DCU Complex. A lot of stars will obviously, Dublin were beaten all Ireland finals in the ladies football there this year, so they'll have a huge amount of talent on show. We have our new management in place at that stage. This will be our first competitive match in the strict sense of the word. So, and on 28th December, when people have had too much turkey, it'll be a great place to go and to kind of kickstart the new season. So, you know, we're hoping that it'll be bigger and better than previous years, Suzanne.
Fantastic. And Brendan, you're joining me next week for the Christmas special, where we're going to be looking at the entire 12 months of Camogie.
Yeah, well, we're going to try and put something together, Suzanne, just to give people a flavour of what happens at various stages throughout the year, say February through to November, December, whatever it is. And we'll just try and kind of summarise it and give your listeners a flavour of what goes on, how it goes on. And it's just a summary of the events over the last 12 months. So that should be interesting, Suzanne. I'm quite sure that it'll be very informative for those that are interested. And look forward to doing the interview next weekend.
I look forward to speaking with you too. Talk to you next week, Brendan. Thank you.
Suzanne. Take care. Bye-bye.
And our thanks again to Brendan Cooper. And join us next week, where we'll be taking a look back at the year in Camogie. We're going to take a short break, but stay with us. We have a lot more GAA action still to come.
103.2 Dublin City FM. Real radio for Dublin.
And welcome back to GAA Sports Desk on Dublin City FM. Remember, if you want to contact us, you can. The text line here is 087-977-1032. You can email us, gaasportsdesk@dublincityfm.ie, or you can go onto our Facebook page, which is GAA Sports Desk on Dublin City FM. Now, the Dublin Bus Herald Dubs Stars football team was named this week, and earlier on this evening, I caught up with Conor McKeown of the Herald to ask him about it. We looked last week with Ronan at the hurling equivalent of the Dub Stars team, and Crokes had seven players in that team, and I see in this week's football equivalent, Vincent's in with two more, nine.
Yeah, I think it's probably a little bit more emphatic how Vincent's won their county title, albeit they were pushed pretty close in the final, but they sort of went from strength to strength, and when they were impressive, they were really, really impressive. And I suppose because you know the players a little bit better, or they know each other a little bit better, they tend to stand out. And even the system of football that they play, they're not getting 10 players behind the ball, and everybody kind of meshes into this kind of, you know, knitted jumper of this defensive football where there's just people standing there doing a robotic job. You know, they entrust their players on possession and even when they're defending as well. And I suppose maybe for that reason they maybe stand out a little bit more, but you know, they were absolutely emphatic Dublin senior football champions this year.
Yeah indeed. And I suppose you've seen obviously a lot of Dublin senior football over the last decade or so, and we know how difficult it is to put Dublin titles back to back. So how would you rate this year's championship in terms of championships you've seen before?
In terms of excitement, I have to say the 2 years that Dublin won this All-Ireland, won the Sam McGuire in 2011-2013, those two championships were really, really exceptional because they had to get the games played off in a very narrow span of time. They kind of almost ran them off like a blitz. So the matches, now I'm just talking about maybe from an excitement point of view, teams were coming together who definitely didn't have their county players for a long summer. Then you were wondering how the Dublin players would react. You know, naturally enough, they were entitled to celebrate those championships. And, you know, I remember in the case of 2011, some of them playing nearly 10 days after winning, you know, Dublin's first All-Ireland in 16 years. So there's a lot more of the unknown in those years. And there's a lot more of a case of, the teams that could build a bit of momentum or draw a bit of energy from the fact that these matches were played so close together. Would kind of thrive. This year they're a little bit more spread out, but I suppose I was expecting a little bit more of a competitive championship this year. I'm surprised that Ballymun Kickhams probably weren't, you know, when they went down this year, they went down pretty spectacularly, and I thought that they'd come back in a big way after narrowly failing putting back-to-back titles last year. St. Bridges were a big letdown as well. Sort of thought, you know, with Tony McEntee as manager, they would have put up a much better fight, but when they went down to St. Jude, they went down pretty spectacularly. So, you know, you were kind of left with, really Plunkett's and Vincent's. Ballyboden and St. Jude's, you know, played their part in it as well. They probably weren't in that bracket. And the final itself was a decent enough game where, Vincent's were probably a lot better than the scoreline showed in the end. So, like, it was a strong championship. The Dublin Senior Football Championship is really, in terms of, you know, quality running right through it, and potentially good games, if not potential winners this year. It's certainly the strongest in Ireland, but it was probably a little bit more emphatic than maybe than I expected it to be. But that's not to take away from St. Vincent. Like, the reason it wasn't the reason it was as emphatic as it was in the end was because that they were so good and they had their act together in a very, very big way.
Yeah, yeah, indeed. And their final opponents, obviously Oliver Plunkett's, three players in the team. And I suppose from talking to yourself and Ronan throughout the year, looking back at Championship games, you guys were always mentioning how good they are in defence. But I see there's only one Plunkett's player in defence. Is that reflective of how good they were as a defensive unit? Or what was the reasoning, I suppose, behind that?
Yeah, I think so. I suppose if you look at it, you know, in the semi-final was by far and away their best defensive performance when they beat Jude. They kept them to 4 points. And this is a team that scored 3-11 against Bridget in the quarterfinal, and Kevin McManaman got 3-5 and he barely got a sniff of it that night. And, you know, I suppose the reason that James Brogan stood out maybe is because he looked to be the defensive leader. He seemed to have a little bit more responsibility than the rest of them. But look, he could have made good cases for Rory O'Connor or Declan Lally or a couple of other ones as well. But again, like, you know, in that sort of system, it's very hard to pick out individuals. Like the Donegal system, over the years, you've gotten a few all-stars, but mainly they were the kind of the breakout players, the Paddy McGraths and the Carl Lacy's, the fellas who got forward, or in the case of Eamon and Ian McGee, the fellas who actually did the man-to-man marking at the back, because everybody else just kind of serves a purpose. But like, I mean, I think certainly James Brogan deserves his award from what I saw. I think he led that team very well, and he was very assured and composed in possession of the ball. And look, had he not been spent a long time injured for the last 3 or 4 years, I think he'd be very much a mainstay of the Dublin squad over the last few years.
Yeah, yeah. And looking at the forward line, obviously an extremely strong forward line. Any forward line that isn't including Nesty Smith or is able to name him on the bench is obviously extremely strong. I suppose you've heard a lot about Dermot Connolly this year, but as you mentioned, other players like Kevin McManaman and Rory Traynor had exceptional championships as well.
Yeah, they did. McManaman was absolutely brilliant, and he carried through a very strong form for Dublin right into the league. Felt very sorry from the night against Plunkett's. I'm sure he was having nightmares about that sort of defence, because it wasn't unlike the sort of afternoon he had when he came off the bench against Donegal in the All-Ireland semi-final. But he was, you know, absolutely exceptional. So I'm sure had they got to the final, he would have been in the running for Footballer of the Year. Rory Traynor is one of these forwards again, like he because he's surrounded by, say, you know, county grade or former county grade quality in Dermot Connolly and Mossy Quinn, and even possibly future county quality in Gavin Bourke and Shane Carty. He probably doesn't get the opinion he deserves, but it goes on the basis that Vincent's have 6 forwards that are all very comfortable taking a score. He probably gets a little bit more room than most corner forwards do. You know, there's so much attention goes on Dermot Connolly and Mossy Quinn, and even Gavin Bourke and Shane Carty coming from the bank here in Dorney. Like, you know, he probably does get an extra inch of room, or maybe doesn't have that extra body marking him that most forwards do in Dublin. And he's been very much played a corner forward role this year, whereas when they won it last year, he played that role as a link man really, really well. You know, I know that he was kind of called up for a meeting for the Dublin senior football team at the start of the year last year, something that Anthony Daly wasn't particularly pleased about. But he does that role, that link role, really, really well, getting on the ball, giving it, getting on it again, moving the play on that little bit extra. But, you know, this year he would play slightly differently. And when things went well for Vincent, you know, when they were getting on top, he was always very good for a score. And, you know, he's the sort of forward that you can't really buy, you know, that sort of fella who's always going to get 3 or 4 points a game and will do it even on the days when your big fellas are struggling. And another fella I thought was brilliant this year, and everything I saw him do, was Niall Scully. He was brilliant for the 21s this year. And you were kind of looking at him wondering, would he get a chance at Dublin, because, you know, the queue is so long with forwards at the moment in the inter-county setup. But I think it's gotten to the stage now where proving it in the Dublin Senior Football Championship, which he did, is probably more indicative of an ability to cut it at senior inter-county level than the under-21 championship. And he did it at both. And, you know, Dublin aren't kind of, you know, for all the players, and we've said this a million times, for all the options that Dublin have, they tend to be, you know, wing backs or corner forwards, or, you know, they tend to be focused on a few positions, and wing forward is certainly not a position that Jim Gavin has a long queue of fellas of top quality available to him. And I think Scully could probably, you know, as soon as next year, start maybe getting some game time in the league and challenging the established order there.
Yeah, indeed. And I suppose another area where people have sometimes been critical of Dublin is at midfield. Eamon Fennell, obviously a previous panel member at senior level. He's been named in the Herald team, Dubstars team. Do you think he's a chance of getting back into that Dublin senior panel?
I probably don't. And it's nothing against Eamon or how he played this year. It's just on the basis that from what I can make out, the Dublin senior football management don't really rate him. You know, you couldn't make... you know, if you looked at Jim Gavin's six midfield options from 2013 and 2014, you know, by my, or as I see it, you couldn't make a case that Eamon Fennell wasn't amongst the six or shouldn't have been amongst the six.
Yeah.
So it's, so whatever the problem is or whatever, and I know that they tend to have problems specifically with, you know, areas that, you know, they don't think the player can fit into the style. Like, you know, Michael Savage, apparently, from what I hear, is in the Dublin panel because he's not quite as comfortable under the high ball as they would like him to be. I don't know whether that's true or not, but I mean, I can imagine that there are specific requirements the players don't measure up, and Fennell isn't the most mobile of midfielders, but he's been really, really effective, you know.
Yeah.
You know, he catches ball in midfield, he can tackle pretty hard, and he pops up and he takes a score. And, you know, if I was to draw up a fictional Dublin panel that had five or six midfielders in it, there's no doubt that Eamon Fennell would not only be in the five or six, but probably be in the top half.
Yeah, yeah, indeed. Moving to matters off the field, this week Leo O'Neill was speaking from Boston, and he kind of resurrected an old idea that they had of having a Leinster GAA stadium that had close access to the M50. I know a previous proposal a couple of years ago of a 25,000-seater stadium was shot down by the Leinster Council. So what are your views on this? I mean, surely, I suppose, the advantage for smaller teams is that, or for the teams outside of Dublin, rather, is that they want a home advantage rather than just playing outside of Croke Park.
Yeah, I kind of know where he's coming at from this. There's a few different problems that would be solved if this came to fruition. One of them is that, and this is the one that's very much getting people angry from outside of Dublin, but one of them is that Dublin would have a home, inverted commas, so they could play their home league games rather than play them in Croke Park, which would be the lesser of two evils, I would imagine, for people who have a problem with Dublin playing their home league games in Croke Park. The second one would be, if you look at the stadia that exist in Leinster outside of Croke Park, you know, Portlaoise and Tullamore, you know, to a certain extent, you can host big-ish games there. But when it comes to championship quarterfinals and football or games with over 20,000 people, you just simply can't. So it would solve the problem of being able to play Leinster semi-finals there. You'd be able to play a lot of Leinster hurling championship games there. And the geographical location of the stadium, I would imagine, you know, people talk about, well, why not put it in Newbridge, given that St. Conrad's Park has fallen down and, you know, Kildare is right smack bang in the middle of Leinster. But, like, the M50 is easier for everybody to get to. And the other thing is, if anybody's gone to St. Conrad's Park or Portlaoise or Moore Park on a day when those smaller grounds are even going to be half full, the access to it is absolutely atrocious. Like, you know,
yeah.
You know, like, Newbridge is built in the middle of a town, you know, behind the extravision, if you know what I mean. And there's 40 car parking spaces there. And on a day when there's going to be a big league game there, there's a tailback right back to the exit off the motorway, and that's with a capacity of 7,000 or 8,000. And Portlaoise, again, like, you get at it from two angles, and they're both very narrow roads, and there's people parking all the way back from the roundabout. So, you know, the reason that you build a stadium in a particular area would be that you could dictate the access to it and the parking and the transport as well.
Yeah.
The other thing that Liam O'Neill hasn't said, and again, like, because this isn't in the planning stages, it hasn't been said, but that this would be a kind of a joint venture, that Leinster Council, the GAA, and possibly Dublin would be in a position to contribute financially towards it. No,
yeah,
more than the Centre of Excellence in Blanchardstown, which is currently being built, is the case. Now, in that sort of situation, it would be municipal insofar as... and again, like, I'm making a lot of presumptions here, but
yeah,
these would all make sense. Other, you know, all the counties in Leinster would have access to the ground. But again, it would probably be a case where, you know, Dublin would be the county who would play their home league matches there. But, you know, if Dublin were to fund a certain level of the stadium, then surely they would be entitled to that too. And I would have thought that the idea of it, that the reason he said the M50 wasn't just for access, it's because this centre of excellence is being built just off the M50 in Blanchardstown and will,
yeah,
be part of the same complex. So there's a lot of dots in what Liam O'Neill is saying that are quite far away from each other, but if you start to join them up, you get a clearer picture of what he's aiming at. But, like, how close this is even to kind of theoretical agreement, let alone coming to any sort of fruition, I haven't a clue. I wouldn't know. But,
yeah,
you know, it's the sort of thing that you could hear about this week, and then you could see the proposal going through Leinster Council in 2 weeks' time, and all of a sudden the building works.
Yeah.
Like, land isn't quite as expensive in Dublin as it used to be. That's another thing we have to remember.
And I suppose a lot of the criticism that happens tends to be, I suppose, in online forums and that kind of place, but county boards regularly vote to have Dublin play their games in Croke Park because that's where the money comes from.
I mean, that's the thing, you know. I mean, there's, so long as the Dublin, you know, people... Like, it depends on what way people want to look at this. If people want to have a narrow view of Dublin playing in Croke Park and say it's just unfair on the team that has to travel to Croke Park, which it is, well, that's fine. But, you know, if Leinster Council then turned around to those people and says, listen, we've cut the funding for coaching in your county, well, they wouldn't like that either. So, you know, yeah, you are damned if you do and you're damned if you don't.
Indeed.
I really don't have the cold, hard answer for that. It would seem to me that at the moment, Dublin playing their home games in Croke Park, from a league sense, makes sense to Dublin, and that Dublin playing their home games in Croke Park, or playing all their championship games in Croke Park, particularly the early rounds in Leinster, makes sense to Leinster Council more than anybody else. You know, there seems to be a fictional notion out there that somehow Liam O'Neill is pandering to Dublin, or that Leinster Council are pandering to Dublin by doing this. But you know, the reason they're doing it is, you know, of a kind of a selfish reason, and that's probably the thing to be remembering here. But, like, you know, if you were from a county that was trying to make the breakthrough and was, you know, Kildare or Meath and wanted to beat Dublin, then you could see the very obvious advantages that they were getting from playing there. You could absolutely understand, you could understand the reason for their ire.
And our thanks to Conor for speaking to us. I suppose the debate about Dublin playing their championship games in Croke Park in football is set to rumble on well into the future. Now, former Dublin hurling manager Anthony Daly is recently launched his autobiography entitled Dalo, the Autobiography. And last week, Mick caught up with Anthony to talk about it.
Many, many congratulations on your new autobiography. I suppose after finishing up managing Dublin, it was probably a right time for to release it.
Yeah, Mick, it was something we've been working on there, myself and Christy O'Connor, for a couple of years, really, to tell you the truth. And we'd most of the back broken on the book, I suppose, but it was just as just to get the timing right, I suppose. And possibly could have had it ready for last Christmas, but I guess we knew for sure I was staying on with the Dubs after last year, and this year probably knew for sure in the back of my head that I was going. So, yeah, it was the right time, I suppose, to run with it when we were going doing it anyway.
And I'm sure you're very, very busy travelling around the country anyway, promoting the book, but do you miss the management?
Yeah, look, since we've been beaten, we had a good bit of work to do, make with it, to finish it, you know. So I've been kept busy with that. As I said, we're working with Christy, and then there's a lot of work to be done with the photograph section. You kind of have to do that yourself, you know, because... You really, it's a personal sort of choice thing, and put in whatever, you know, you want to put in. And so, yeah, well, at time, you know, I've had an hour chat for an hour with Joe Cunningham, and you know, I think Dublin have made a great appointment in Joe and the group that he's brought with him, with Tommy staying on and with Shane Garrod coming in. I think it's a great mix, and I'd be looking forward to following them in the new year and following Clare as well, I suppose. But no, yeah, look, it's, when you're at something like that for 6 years, it becomes sort of routine for you, and you know, very similar to a job, I suppose, really, where you plan your week around it, and you plan your time around it, and your other work you have to do with it, and including the video work, and you know, dealing with players on a one-to-one basis. So yeah, look, there's some parts you'll miss, and there's other parts you won't miss. But overall, yeah, you would miss it. It's a very exciting thing to be involved in as intercounty at the highest level. You know, looking forward to Division 1A to be getting ready for it. And in some ways, yeah, it'd be killing me not to be involved. But what can you do? You just, you know, you can't stay at it forever. It's time for a change. And I think everybody in Dublin hurling will be well served by a change at this stage.
And as you mentioned there, it's like a job in many ways, and intercounty management has gone that way, and even club management seems to have gone that way as well.
Yeah, like there's huge development, obviously, we all know, with technology and with the expertise that's available now. I mean, the amount of sports scientists that are out there now, you know, with massive experience from all different codes, and they bring that to the equation. I mean, I wouldn't have much of that except what I'd be going, have learned off them, those guys myself. But yeah, look, it very much, when you're a player, even though they give massive commitment now, way more than we were ever asked to give, like, in fairness to them, But you still really only have to get yourself right, and if you can help out with other lads along the way, mighty fair play to you, but you have to get yourself right. I suppose with management, you have to get the team around you right first, which is your kind of your mentors and your backroom staff, and also then you have to try and think of every one of the 35 or 6 guys that are on the panel, and possibly you'll be starting off maybe with 45 or 6 and have to let go 9 or 10 guys, which I always found the very hardest part of that, you know, because at least if a fella doesn't make the 15 or he doesn't make the 26, he still has a chance to bounce back as the year goes on. But when you're dropping a lead, you know, when the panel is being cut back to your league panel, let's say, I always found that the most difficult thing, because there's really not too many ways back for him, unless he's a very young player in that season. So that, because that's, one of the parts I won't be missing.
I suppose the winter as well, coming in and with the season, I know it's still going on with club championships taking place, but normally the inter-county season starts with the Dub Stars on New Year's Day, I think, this year, and it's always a cold, miserable day, and certainly January and February training must be tough.
Yeah, that's tough going, and I'm going to enjoy New Year's Eve this year, Mick. I'm not due back in the pub until late February. If I'm going back, I don't know whether Declan wants to keep going there or not, and we'll see what happens. But Jim Gavin, fair play to him, put it on last year on New Year's Eve evening. So it was fairly late when we got back to Clare. And, yeah. But no, look, once New Year's Day comes in, I think the Blue Star is a good signal for the lads that they really have to knuckle down. I know they're back doing gym work and all that at the moment, and fitness assessments and all that. So the feedback from the few lads I've been talking to, or just a few texts with, are they're happy and they're enjoying it, and it's new and it's fresh, and that's always, you know, a break is as good, a change is as good as a break, they say. So I suppose that's the thing, it's a change and a fresh voice, and one person I'd admire an awful lot in the hurling scene, and would be fairly friendly with him over the years, and had many good battles with him, but he was too far away from me now as a player, but we had a few good tussles on the sideline. But I know, I think it's a great choice for Dublin, and with one eye on the future as well, with bringing the lads along with him, I think it's very positive.
Now, you travelled far and wide with Dublin, from Kilrush, from your home, and of course up to Dublin quite a lot, but now you're travelling, as I said earlier on, far and wide, promoting the book. When did the idea first come about, or was it Christy that came to you, or did you decide yourself that you wanted to put this together?
Well, I tell you, like, I suppose with the Clare thing, there was a bit of fascination always, Mick, and I first met a different publisher back in 2001 and had a bit of lunch with them, and sort of a free lunch.
Always the best.
Because I never wound up signing the contract. I felt there was, you know, a lot more stuff that maybe it wasn't the right time to do it, and wound up not doing it. And just another, a different publisher, Transworld, came to me on McHugh there, down in Leeson Street there, you know, picked up the phone and just said, look, we have an idea, would you be willing to meet us? And one thing led to another. I suppose that was back probably late 2012, you know, so I suppose I'd need a ghostwriter. I admire Paul Galvin for what he'd done. I mean, it was massive, but while you're trying to manage Dublin, you couldn't be writing a book, to be honest with you, with the driving and everything, and unless you're the right good dictaphone, but you'd probably go mad, I'd say. And I suppose Paul had the year to sit down and really have a go at it, and he did a great job as well. I've read his book, and it's fascinating reading. He's a fascinating guy. And but I would have needed somebody with me, and it was fierce handy as well for us as well that Christy was goalkeeping coach with Dublin, you know, so for the last 2 seasons, and would have been up and down with me in the car quite a bit. Like, he wouldn't be coming every night now, but he'd come once a fortnight at least to train Gary and Alan and Stephen this year. And so we were able to do a good bit of the work, mostly on the way home, because if you were trying to do it on the way up, you'd be nearly drained by the time you came up. But it was, you know, it eased the burden a bit, but we'd still often be outside Christie's house at 1:45 in the morning, doing bits and pieces on it, it was kind of ready to go. I suppose we possibly, with a push, could have got it out for last Christmas, and many people would have said that would have been the time to do it after winning Leinster and being promoted back into Division 1A, but, you know, in some ways, I suppose stories are a bit like life. It doesn't always turn out to be the fairy tale ending, running off at the Liam McCarthy Cup. I was lucky to get away with doing that twice as a player. And, you know, we had great times at Dublin in the 6 years and a few sad days as well. But No, sure, look, at that, I suppose, makes it more realistic for people as well, that it doesn't wind up with the happy ending. We got well beaten in Thurles, and you know, that's near the end of the book, and it's kind of sad finish up, but sure, that's life at times.
Of course, the triumphs with Clare, it is fairy tale in many ways, because you were there as captain back in 95, and then recaptured the Lee McCarthy Cup in 97 as well. And I suppose for many, many years, Anthony, Clare struggled not only to win Munster titles, but to win an All-Ireland.
Oh, yeah, sure, look, Mick, tell you the truth, All-Irelands were the farthest thing from our minds, you know, when we were trying to get up the ladder a bit with Lynn Gaynor, I guess. Lynn would have done four great years with us, and we beat Tip, Cork and Limerick in Lynn's time in Championship, but we seemed to flop on the big days for whatever reason, and you know, probably more of a mental thing, but I suppose Ger brought that extra bit of steel, and for us the massive breakthrough was winning Munster in 95, and that gave us a new great sense of new belief in ourselves, and I think very similar to the Dubs last year. I think we were very, very unlucky not to kick on and go the whole way, like once we had made the breakthrough in Leinster, and very hard to put your finger on where it all went wrong this year, but in Clare it was all about the dream, was when we hadn't won Munster since 32, like, so I mean, I thought there was 13, I think, Munster finals last in the preceding time up to 95, so that was the real dream, and just I think we played with freedom and abandon after that. As I said, a bit like I thought Dublin did last year against Cork, I thought it was a magnificent game, and hinged on maybe a couple of, you know, things that went on during the game, and just a pity we didn't have the bit of luck with us on the day. We could have got that final, and you'd never know what would have happened, ironically, against Clare, as it turned out, but sure, we'd have taken our chances if that was the case.
True enough. 95 obviously was the pinnacle as a player, or would you say 97 was even better, coming back, having been beaten in 96?
Yeah, well, in terms of the All-Irelands, I'd say 97 was sweeter, mate, not just because, you know, we beat Tip twice, but we also beat Kilkenny and Cork that year. And I mean, to beat the golden triangle, I suppose, to win that All-Ireland was very satisfying. And I suppose Ger did put up to us that the big test of a team was, you know, that good teams win one, that great teams win a second one. And look, I'd have taken one gladly when I was about 22 or 3. But, you know, it was very satisfying because he really put a lot of pressure on us. That, not pressure on us, but just really shoved it up to us to show that we were good enough to win a second one. And a lot of people would say we were a bit unlucky not to get another one out of it, maybe with a bit of trouble with timekeeping and stuff like that.
But true enough, yeah.
Years, you know. So yeah. Look, if you told me I'd have got two and three Munsters, make it, I'd have taken the hand off you. I said, as a fella coming out of under-21 and minor into a Clare panel there, that was devoid of any belief. And you know, we just never saw ourselves as getting up there. And just slowly but surely, you know, I suppose a few of us had a bit of ambition. And then this younger brigade of the likes of the Lohans and the McMahons and the Jamesies came along and added to them by Ollie Bakers and Shawnee McMahons and fellas.
All right, thanks to Anthony Daly for speaking to us last week. And that autobiography, Dale of the Autobiography, is available. And we regularly speak to Mick O'Grady from the Friends of Dublin Hurling. And the Friends of Dublin Hurling are actually giving you an opportunity to win a copy of Anthony Daly's autobiography. If you sign up or renew your membership for the Friends of Dublin Hurling, it's only €20 for the entire year. And you get, there's loads of deals involved with signing up. So you have a chance of winning one of 8 copies. So head over to fodh.ie for your chance to win. Sign up for the year for only €20. And another thing to look out for, Dublin senior football and hurling fans, the Dublin Spring Series in Croke Park has been confirmed. So there is a match package available for only €30. You can get to see Dublin against Donegal on Saturday the 7th of February in football. And then in hurling, they're taking on Cork on the 7th of March. And that, of course, is going to be Ger Cunningham, a Cork man, as a Dublin manager, taking on Cork for the first time. And following that game is going to be Dublin against Tyrone in the football. And then on Saturday the 26th of March, Dublin are taking on Derry, and that one is also at 7 o'clock. So €10, it works out at €10 per day. You can't really go wrong with that. And tickets available, a great little Christmas package for somebody potentially. But I'm afraid that is all we've got time for here on GAA Sports Desk this evening. And remember that the sport continues tomorrow at 7 o'clock. It's the Sporting Choice with Keane O'Callaghan, and I would advise you to stay tuned this evening to get your culture on. Kira, what's coming up on Artbeat tonight?
Tonight on Artbeat, Des is looking back to Killiney Village, and he's going to be talking about a small festival taking place on the east coast of Dublin. And I'm going to be talking to Conor Byrne, the events manager of Smock Alley, about their upcoming Christmas fair.
Excellent. So stay tuned for Artbeat from 8 until 8:30. But from everyone on the GAA Sports Desk team, Suzanne Parker, Katie Scannon on sound, and myself, Peter Brannigan, have a good evening.
Would you like a career as a radio journalist? I'm Norman Jack, creator of the new online radio journalism course at the Irish Academy of Public Relations. We'll study broadcast writing, audio production, working as a freelancer, and other tips from my 35 years as a radio journalist. Graduates receive their diplomas in radio journalism and the chance to have their work aired on Dublin City FM. Visit irishacademy.com or call 278-0802. That's irishacademy.com or phone 278-0802.
Dublin City Council is reviewing the City Development Plan and invites input from the public. This is your opportunity to help shape the city over the next 6 years. Just log on to www.dublincitydevelopmentplan.ie or follow the link on the City Council's Facebook page. The City Development Plan. Share your voice. Shape your future.
Inside Sport, every Tuesday at 7 on 103.2 Dublin City FM, covering Olympic sports. From athletics to boxing, cycling to rugby sevens, we've got it covered. And we'll bring you all the way to Rio and the 2016 Olympic Games. With reports and features and plenty of special guests, Inside Sport with myself, Dave Hooper, here on 103.2 Dublin City FM.
Tune in to the Art of Living radio show every Thursday at 8 p.m. with me, Victoria Mary Clark.
And me, Sarah Leahy.
And every week we will be talking to fascinating, funny and intriguing people about their lifestyles.
That's the Art of Living radio show every Thursday at 8 p.m. here on Dublin City FM.
103.2 Dublin City FM. Dublin radio at its best.